There's great value in going through struggle. There's great value in going through the pain of being insecure, being unsure of yourself, lacking confidence. But then you put the work in and you go through, whether it's formal training or you just keep coming back to the fight. You just keep going back to that thing that you struggle at. And little by little, you start noticing that you're getting better. And when you prepare properly and you do it right, it flows. I mean, it just happens very naturally. And I think part of that is because preparation breeds confidence.
It still hits. I don't miss it. It's go, go, go. Like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done. And I told your soul. When I throw these flows, like it's Rochambeau. And I ain't too close. It's Joe Smo goes. And I'm on my grind. That is all the time. I do not do breaks. That's right. I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. And a little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bad. But I still ask for the boy got skills. I don't need her. I don't need him. I don't need help with me. I got this. I can sing songs. I can spit raps. And I can do both. Even do this. Word.
Support for the Honest Acts podcast comes from Montage Planning Partners. Partnerships like this make our community a better place to live and work. That's why Montage Planning Partners is proud to support the important work of Honest Acts. When it comes to financial planning, most financial companies ask, "What's your salary?" At Montage Planning Partners, we ask, "What's your story?" We know building the right financial plan means looking at more than just money. That's why we start by asking the right questions, listening to what matters most to you, then guiding you every step of the way to help you live the life you want. Now and years from now. Plan your financial story with Montage Planning Partners with Northwestern Mutual, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Contact Montage Planning Partners today. Visit montageplanningpartners.com for further information and disclosures. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by Wilks Consulting, a Ramsey preferred coaching firm. Are you drowning in debt? Is the weight of financial stress holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? Then it's time to break free and regain control of your financial future. Wilks Consulting specializes in financial and debt consulting. Their team of 4 highly trained Ramsey Solutions advisors are ready to help you take charge of your money. Whether you're looking to get out of debt, pay off student loans, or simply need assistance on how to prepare to buy a home, Wilks Consulting can help you fine-tune your budget and provide the resources and guidance you need to meet your goals. Don't let debt or the fear of finances control your life any longer. Head over to wilcopa.com and book a hassle-free, no-obligation call. Your first step towards financial freedom. Again, that's wilcopa.com. WILCOPA.com. Wilks Consulting, making financial independence a reality. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On The Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at FitAFNutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at FitAFNutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game. What's up, podcast? It's Bill Corcoran Jr., host of the On The Stacks podcast here in the MPP studio. Michael O'Donnell, welcome to the On The Stacks podcast.
Very cool to be here. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear, but I'm excited you're here, but I'm more excited, I think, about your the cufflinks. You got the Mario and Luigi going on.
Well, that goes back a long way.
Does it?
Yeah, well, I'm a millennial. So, yep. You know, we played Mario Brothers and all those games since we were kids. But I've got a 7-year-old now. and he got the bug a couple of years ago. So Mario and Luigi are probably the biggest thing in our house, but we got some competition from the princesses in the form of my four-year-old. So,
Yeah. What's your son's name?
Mikey.
Did he pick these out?
He picked them out, and he demanded that I wear them today because I said, "Dad's going to go do a thing today." And
oh, he said, so you told him? Yeah. Said, "Hey, I'm going on this show. I'm doing this thing." Did he know what a podcast was? Did you tell him?
I tried to explain it to him. 7-year-old brain, not quite there yet. Okay. But I think he has an idea. He thinks I'm on TV or on a YouTube channel. Right.
Okay.
Now,
so, well, we are. This will be on YouTube.
Well, there we go. So he's right.
I was going to say. So yeah, he probably, you know, he's usually 7, right? So I'm sure he probably watches like YouTube Kids.
He watches YouTube Kids, and he's venturing into some of the more adult stuff. He watches this thing in the morning called Stay Wild. And my wife and I monitor it pretty closely. There's some stuff there that's like teenage, maybe a little college oriented. We're not so sure we want our 7-year-old seeing it yet, but he's at that age where he's testing his boundaries, and it's still a fun ride.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Mikey for picking out the
Mario on the right, Luigi on the left.
Boom. So, can't beat it. Yeah, I love it. I was saying, like, I know we had spoken one other time about this, but like in my previous life, I called myself a previous suit guy. I used to be a suit guy. And so I have a suit just like that. You know, I had the cufflinks and everything. So like nowadays, you know, I'm a little more casual, but I can appreciate, you know, the look. I some days I miss it. Some days I don't, you know, but like everybody always just say to me like, "Oh man, like you wear a suit like every day." And I'm like, "Yeah," I'm like, "it's comfortable." Like I could be comfortable in this. And you know, a lot of people that know me nowadays are probably thinking like, I can't see this guy in a suit. Like if you only know me from the last couple of years, you may not remember me from my suit days. But like going back to that, I was like, you know, like I could throw on a suit just like that, you know, today or tomorrow and be just as comfortable as I am wearing this. I don't know what it is about it. I think it's all about just getting the right fit, you know, and a lot of people don't understand that, I feel like.
Well, it's one thing to go buy a suit off the rack and just think you're going to throw it on and it's going to look like something you see on TV.
Right.
That's not reality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everything in life these days, especially, is tailor-made. And suits are no different. So it's a fun part of the job. We get to kind of customize our clothing a little bit and customize our look, customize our personality. You know, that's a fun part about what we do. But it's the different chapters of our life. You know, I've gone through the phases where it's the polo shirt or the T-shirt or the gym look.
Yeah,
Can't do that in court.
You can't.
But they don't allow that. But we've
not yet.
They don't allow it, but you could show up and you'll promptly be thrown out.
You may not. You might not have that many clients. If you dress that way,
your client would probably fire you on the spot.
Yeah.
There's a certain expectation as to how a lawyer is going to present himself.
Yeah.
How a podcast host is going to present himself.
Right.
And it doesn't mean you have to check all those boxes, but you know, be yourself, but show some respect to the profession too.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I found very interesting about you is, you know, I guess I'm, you know, it's a pre-law for you, but you've had a number of different experiences. Like you've done a lot of different, you know, jobs, I'll say, right? And I find that very interesting because I'm sure it's given you a lot of perspective and has helped you doing what you do today, even though like going back to like some of your previous jobs that you had as a kid growing up or whatever, a lot of people probably look at it and be like, "Oh, like how's that going to help him in his career?" But I'm sure there's probably so many things that you've taken away from a lot of the previous experiences that you've had that really help you excel in the courtroom.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we're all the sum of all of our experiences, right? So I'm here 41 years. I've seen some stuff. I've experienced a lot of stuff, a lot more to experience. But I was a very fortunate kid in the sense that I was given opportunities to get into different industries. I didn't always know I wanted to be a lawyer. I didn't always know I wanted to get into a certain profession. But there's certain things you have to do when you're a kid. Like, for example, you got to get a summer job or you got to do something to put a couple bucks in your pocket because mom and dad are only going to float you for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was great in that regard. He was always kind of, I have two other siblings, but he was always great in the sense of trying to get us to be a step or two ahead of what we were going to need to do down the line. So one of his things was he always was on top of us about getting different jobs and doing different things. And part of it, sure, was putting a couple bucks in your pocket so that he didn't have to pay for, you know, gas in the vehicle, movie tickets, and all that stuff. It was about getting life experience. So we would, some of the jobs I've had, I bartended. I worked as a waiter or server. I worked as a summer camp counselor. Our family, my dad had a driving range, a golf business that he ran, and golf's near and dear to my heart. All of those jobs required me to kind of get out of my comfort zone.
Mm.
It also required me to interact with people. And that is not something that comes naturally to everybody. I was an awkward kid, like a lot of kids.
Were you?
Yeah, I was an awkward kid.
I can't see that. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the way you are now, like I can never imagine you being an awkward.
No, well, we all have insecurities, right?
Right.
And we all have self-doubt. And we were talking earlier about speaking and comfort with speaking. I remember as like a middle schooler or high schooler, I was terrified of speaking. I didn't want to have to speak in front of the school or speak in front of my class. Like I vividly remember an experience giving a presentation where we had to do like a book report presentation. I have an uncle who's an eye doctor, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll do something on the eye because I can ask Uncle Brian about, you know, the different anatomy, and then maybe I'll get a leg up because I have some inside access to him. And he gave me a model of the eye. And it was great. Like you take it apart, you show the different parts of the eye. What I didn't realize when I got up there and my hand starts trembling, the eye's just going, blah, 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 blah. And I look like a complete goof. But it was because I was just uncomfortable speaking. Mm. And I think by doing some of the jobs that I did and having some of the experiences that I did, I've gotten to the point where, well, now I speak for a living. And right. And it's not just in court. You're speaking with your clients every day. You're speaking with opposing counsel. You're speaking with witnesses. And it's a skill. It's not something that comes naturally, and it's something that you've got to work at.
And I think a lot of people really underestimate that and communication skills in general.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And specific to the practice of law, it's the fun part is going to court. The fun part is standing in front of a jury or standing in front of a judge and making an argument. Or a lot of what we do is in writing, in our papers. And it's fun to sit down and put your client's story together and tell it in a persuasive way. But if you're not working at that stuff, if you're not practicing, if you're not honing those skills every single day, it's like everything else. They get stale. And it affects the quality of work that you put out there. So
for sure.
We try to, in today's technologically driven society, we try to still do things face-to-face when we can. We still try to sit down with people and have a conversation like you and I are right now. Because when you're doing that, you're practicing your craft. You're practicing your job every single day. And I think it just helps you be a better communicator.
Yeah. What really helped you like become a better speaker? Was there anything like you've done? Like besides obviously just, you know, day in, day out doing what you do, but like was there any like course you took, or was there anything you did like, or did you just kind of like learn the old school hard knock way of just putting yourself out there and being vulnerable, which, you know, I'm a firm believer in really just kind of putting yourself out there and kind of letting yourself maybe flounder a little until you kind of figure it out.
Well, what you just said, I think is so true. I think there's great value in going through struggle. There's great value in going through the pain of being insecure, being unsure of yourself, lacking confidence. But then you put the work in and you go through, whether it's formal training or you just keep coming back to the fight. You just keep going back to that thing that you struggle at. And little by little, you start noticing that you're getting better. That was more of my approach was I just kept doing things that would require me to get out of my comfort zone. And I should say I did do something that maybe wasn't something I volunteered for. It was something I had to do. I had a semester at Luzerne County Community College. And when I was there, one of the courses I had to take was public speaking. And I think that's still required at most colleges these days. But I was terrified of it. I didn't want to take the class.
I think everybody is, right?
Yeah, like, it just, you like, get so many negative connotations with it. But I had a really cool professor. The people in my class were nice. And it was I don't want to say an inflection point because it seems a little dramatic. But it was a point where it clicked a little bit.
And you felt more comfortable.
I got confidence. Yeah. I knew I could do it. I didn't fumble the eye model with my handshake.
That's
terribly.
All it took was the one eyeball hand fumble. That's
yeah,
it.
You have that one moment where you just all of a sudden realize, okay, I could do this, and that's been the story of how I've had any successes in life. It's always been something that either I set the goal or somebody helped me set the goal, and usually it was something that I stunk at first, but you get that first little taste of, hey, you know, you're okay at this. And then I'm pretty good at catching a little momentum and then building off of that. So you got to recognize when you're struggling, because if you're just struggling doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, it's not going to happen. But at the same time, you've got to confront those weaknesses. And if you had said to 15, 16-year-old Mike, you know, someday you're going to be a lawyer and you're going to talk to juries, judges, clients for a living, I probably would have crawled back into my room because I'm not talking for a living.
Yeah, like, oh my God, that's crazy. I can never do that.
Not my thing. But it became my thing. And I enjoy doing it now. And it's the client interactions, I will say, is the best part of the day. It's great sitting down with somebody. Let's face it, my job, like most jobs, but particularly in my job, nobody comes to me because they're having a good day. There's some problem. Something happened, and we represent only people who have been victims, whether it was a workplace accident or a motor vehicle accident, or we've had a number of cases that my uncle has handled quite capably involving abuse of vulnerable people. And they're coming to you, and they're coming for help. And to sit down with somebody, and they're in that vulnerable state, and they've come to you. They could have gone anywhere else, but they've come to you with that problem. You take it seriously, but you also listen. You stop talking for a second. You listen, you let them tell their story, and then you sit down, and it becomes problem-solving time. We're going to try to figure out a way to, we can't undo what happened in the past. We tell people that a lot. You know, we don't have a magic wand. We can't go back and erase those terrible experiences that they've had. But the good part about the civil justice system in Pennsylvania and in the United States, it's what we call remedial. It's going to remedy. It's going to fix as much as it can the bad things that have happened to you. And that's what we do. We sit down, we sketch out a plan. We're very, very big on involving our clients in the process. We're very, very big on communication. We've had some clients tell us, you know, no more letters, no more emails, no more phone calls. But we want to make sure people know what's going on. It's their case, it's not our case. But our job is to take them from the point where they've been aggrieved or been wronged in some way, and we're going to try to get them to the point where we, as much as we can make right, we've made right through the legal process. And there's something very powerful about that, and it gives great purpose to me and my colleagues in my office, and it makes it very easy to get out of bed every day.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of going back to like the public speaking thing, kind of like, you know, going into law, like I think, you know, one of the things is consistency and discipline. And I feel like just looking at you, I feel like you're a consistent, if like you look like a guy that's consistent, disciplined. And I think that's like also one of the things that's key to, you know, not just your success, but anybody's success. And, you know, like just on the podcasts, in the podcast world, this is like a crazy stat. And I've kind of seen some of them, you know, pop up here and there. And like, I've never really, like, really, really fully paid attention, like until I'm starting to see it more. Now the podcasting industry is like really, really blowing up more now than ever, right?
Without a doubt.
But like, did you know that 90% of podcasts don't make it past episode 3?
I didn't know that. It doesn't surprise me though, because I would bet by episode 3, you've figured out whether or not you feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
And also too, at that point, you realize you got to put work in. Like, it's not going to just run itself.
Right.
Like, we're sitting here in the studio right now, and you know, there's stuff all over the place. This stuff probably wasn't here on day one,
right?
But it's stuff that you figured out by experience, by doing the podcast, by talking to other people who had done it before you, which is another thing that I'm a major believer in. If you're looking to get into something in life, and not just, you know, legal stuff, but
any business, any profession,
the best thing that you can do is find a mentor. Find somebody who does it. You're going to learn some stuff in a textbook. You're going to learn some stuff in a classroom, and it's all important. I'm not minimizing it. But I'm a strong believer that the best teacher is actually getting out and doing it. And I'll be the first to say I'm the beneficiary of that. I have my uncle and godfather. One of my best friends in the world. He brought me into the legal profession.
I was gonna say, like, what led you into?
So one of those summer jobs. Eventually, I got away from being a camp counselor and a bartender and some of those other things. I worked as a custodian too, by the way.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I've
done it all.
I've done lots of fun stuff.
Yeah.
But my uncle Neil O'Donnell had said to me one summer, he's like, I think you might like this, and that was right around that phase where I was kind of getting over some of those public speaking.
How old were you?
I was about 18.
Okay.
Now, I had worked for him before, and I'm a beneficiary of having some really close family members. I remember as a kid, this is all fitting together, as you'll see, I shagged files for him. He had files, and I'd put the files in the basement, and I'd put them in the cabinet, and it was a fun little summer job as like a 14, 15-year-old kid. And that was my dad's doing. You gotta get a job. So call Uncle Neil, get you a job. But then as you mature a little bit and you start coming into your own education wise, and he sees I'm a decent student, and he said, look, you should come work at the office. And my uncle started his own office. He started he had worked in Philadelphia and did the big law firm thing. And then I think it was 1991. '91. He came up back to the area and opened an office in Pittston. And he joined with some experienced practitioners, but it was the law office of Neil O'Donnell. That was it. He was his own guy. He didn't even have a secretary at first. So he worked it from the ground up. And I don't know, he saw something in me and said, I want to bring you into this. And at that point, obviously, his practice was a little more established, and he had a staff and was doing well for himself. But what he did for me was he didn't just put me in the file room anymore. He was giving me real quasi kind of legal work to do. He was having me draft briefs. He was having me analyze medical records. He was having me look at what we call pleadings, which are where one side puts their position in writing at various points during the case. And again, that momentum thing, it started to build, and I was actually doing real legal work with a great mentor looking over my shoulder. And then the real fun happened. He started taking me to appearances, and we're going to court together. I'm putting on a suit.
As an 18-year-old kid, 19?
Yeah, as a kid. I'm putting on a suit, standing next to my uncle, and I'm looking at him like, this guy's got his stuff together, and like he's the
real deal.
He's good.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's like a young athlete watching their favorite pro. And I'm just watching him do his thing. I watched him try cases. I remember we had an experience that we went to Tennessee for depositions where we're examining witnesses under oath. I say we because I was sitting next to him while he's doing all the work.
Yeah.
But I just remember that experience so vividly. And it was a terrible case. It was actually a family friend who had been maimed by an 18-wheeler not far from here, down Wyoming Ave.
Wow.
And the guy nearly died. And as you get into the case, you start to learn stuff about the wrongdoer. In this case, it was a guy driving an 18-wheeler. And what we realized is the gentleman didn't speak English, couldn't read English, and that's a requirement under the law. You have to be conversant in the English language. And the reason for that is, by the way, the road signs that you see, the vast majority of them, if not all of them, are English. You need to be able to read digits. You need to be able to keep logbooks. Like, there's certain requirements of that profession to do it properly and do it safely that you need to have certain skills. And I remember sitting at the deposition table with my uncle, and he's grilling this guy, and we had the book of regulations in front of us. And this was my first, like, almost lawyer moment. We took a little break, and the gentleman was talking, and I elbowed my uncle in the hallway, and I said, Uncle, I don't think this guy can read that book. I don't think he can read those regulations. And I'm not picking on the man. I mean, he was trying to make a living.
Yeah, you're just pointing out facts.
But he doesn't mean he's qualified to operate an 18-wheeler.
Right.
That's a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
And so we go back on the record. Neil takes out it's called the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, slides it across the table, and says to him, I'll just use a generic name, Mr. Jones. He goes, Mr. Jones, I want you to turn to the cover of that. Can you tell me what that book's called? And the guy looks up, and we have this on video, by the way. And the guy looks up, and he goes, I can't read that. And then we went to another page or two just to confirm it. But it was a blowout moment in the case where we realized that this gentleman was not qualified to be behind an 18-wheeler. And then on top of that, what we see in a lot of our cases is it's not just his responsibility to make sure he's qualified. It's his employer's responsibility. And unfortunately, what you see so many times in these cases, people are looking past the requirements. They just want a body in a truck, taking cargo from point A to point B because there's money involved. And what we realized is the owner of the trucking company, it was a smaller outfit, it wasn't like one of these major trucking companies, he knew exactly the caliber of person he had. He knew this individual was not properly trained, properly qualified. He knew he shouldn't have been behind an 18-wheeler. And he put him on the road anyway. And as a result, our family friend, our client, was severely injured. So, again, we couldn't undo the bad that happened from that trucking accident, but we had a breakthrough down in Tennessee during those depositions, and it completely turned the whole trajectory of the case. And at that point, that was when certainty happened, that I was like, that was amazing. And my uncle, he's a very witty guy, but he goes, look, Mike, they're not all like that. So just get your expectations in check.
Yeah.
We're going to get focus on going to law school next, and then we're going to get into the profession. But having those aha watershed type moments.
So that was it for you.
That was it. And
you're like, I love this.
It was cool. It was cool to be part of that breakthrough, and there with my uncle, godfather, mentor, the guy who's still steering me to this day. I mean, I'm 15 years into my career, right there by my side, and the pat on the back too. I mean, you know, I remember after the depositions were over, I think I went back to school, and he's still working the case. And I remember calling me several times just to tell me what had progressed and what was happening. And every time we would talk, he would say to me, I still can't believe you recognize that he'd never read the regulations that apply to his profession. And that had a causal, or it was a piece of the reason that the collision happened. So
yeah.
we kind of unpacked it together, and then I was off after that.
Yeah. So going back to like those previous jobs, like which one did you like the best? I'm going to guess them say the golf.
Yeah, the golf.
Yeah.
Life's funny because at the time, I don't think I liked it very much.
Why not?
Well, it's family business. So it was my dad's business. And when you have a family business, you're always on call.
Yeah.
And when it's your dad, and my dad's a funny guy. He's always going. He's always got his hand on something. That's always been his style. He's a high energy guy. But he'd have five or six different things going on. He wasn't always at the driving range, and we lived in South Wilkesbury. The driving range was in Mountaintop. But the common refrain, and my brother and sister and I joke about it to this day, my mom and dad too, but my brother and
sister. Did everybody work there?
Oh, the whole family.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole family. We joke about it to this day. The phone would ring, and this is before cell phones, and it would be somebody who we had hired to work up there, and the picker was broken. You know what the picker is, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the little cart that you drive around with the cage on.
Yep.
And it happened, I'm not going to say daily, but every weekend. And every time it happened, it was within earshot of the phone, who had their driver's license at the time, you're shooting up to the driving range to deal with the broken picker.
And
it was usually something silly, because the terrain where the driving range was situated, it was a little bit bumpy and rocky. And what would happen is the little baskets that the balls get filtered into, you hit a rock or you hit a bump, the basket, even if it had a load of golf balls in it, it would fly up in the air. And you're looking through this cage, so you don't have a really great view, and you run it over. And the basket would get stuck under the mechanism, and you're just a complete
mess. You're done. You're like, oh, I'm checked out.
But then there's still folks coming to use your business. They want to hit some golf balls on a nice day in June or July. So we got to figure out a way to get the operation back up and running again. So at the time, we were like, oh, every time the phone would ring, we'd be like, I got somewhere to be. I got to go do that thing.
Yeah.
But looking back at it, now having had a little life experience, a little maturity, it was an awesome job, because when there were down times, I'm a golfer. Grab a bucket of balls and go over and just whack golf balls for a half hour while we had some downtime, or somebody wasn't driving over the picker. So that part was fun. It taught me about responsibility. It was, again, another responsibility, life learning lesson, in the sense that when you own your own business, I didn't own it, but might as well have, because it's family.
Yeah, it's a family, yeah.
You've got to be ready for anything. And if you're not willing to go tend to that, it's going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a mess, and your family's going to look bad, or the people that you work with are going to look bad. That is your baby. You've got to take care of it. And it wasn't a long-term thing. I think my dad had the range maybe 4 or 5 years. And then, like I said, he's moving. So he moved on to something else. And actually, he took a different job and left the area, and that's a whole other story. But when the driving range was there, we learned a lot about being responsible to a business. We learned a lot about interacting and management of employees, dealing with supplies, dealing with customers. There's that speaking thing again. I mean, we would have folks come in, and 95 to 99% of them were awesome people. But every now and then, there's going to be a problem. And if you're not prepared to deal with that in a professional and polite way, it's not good for the business. Yeah, it's not good for the
business. They'll eat you alive.
Especially as a guy who can't speak very well.
Yeah.
So it's learning trial by fire. Mm-hmm. It's learning on the go. It's learning out of necessity. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't,
it's do or die. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, with the whole like communication thing, I think, you know, speaking and dealing with people, I was never a bartender or server, but, you know, you said you were. And I think that's probably, you know, if I had to guess, and I everybody that I know that has ever been a bartender or server, whether they still are or not, all said that it's like one of the greatest experiences that they've ever had, meaning like it taught them so much.
For sure.
Like it did wonders for them, like down the road, if they decide to change careers or not. But you really learn. And again, without ever experiencing it, I just noticed from how many people I have, a lot of friends, close friends that, you know, have been servers and moved on. But they always say, like, man, like that, like, taught me everything I need to know about people.
Well, it again, you're forced to. A lot of people get into it. They think they know what they're getting into. But until you have that first dish that gets sent back, or you have that first drunk customer, you know, that's stuff that you've got to deal with. That was a job I did after the range. And I was in college, and I did that. It was kind of a little bit of overlap with when I started working in my uncle's law firm. But that it was a fantastic experience in the sense that you're learning to communicate with the public. You're learning to be responsible for members of the public. Be again, as a bartender, I mean, you have legal responsibilities to recognize when somebody is intoxicated, and you've got to cut them off. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Right.
Again, that's a rarity. I think, at least in my experience, it was. But that's still a skill that you need to have. And you got to keep that in mind, that maybe it's not something you do or use every single day, but maybe it's still part of your playbook that you need to be familiar with. And not to bounce around, but that's kind of part of the legal profession too. So maybe I didn't realize it at the time, but that was training my mind and how I interacted and kind of went about my existence were the sum of all of our experiences. Those experiences taught me how to learn on the fly. Or the thing we see a lot post-COVID is, in my practice as a workers' comp specialist, almost all of what we do is through video conference. Technology fails, don't we know, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you just throw up your hand and say, okay, well, we're not going to do this medical deposition today, or we're not going to have this hearing today. You need to be able to stay calm under pressure. You need to be able to find a solution and make sure that whatever it is you were there to get done, if you can get it done, get it done. Or have a plan B as to how you're going to get it done. Those experiences in the restaurant, at the driving range, to a certain degree in the law office as a kid, they get you ready for when you're the guy. You know, the judge is looking at the attorney. The judge is not necessarily going to be asking questions of the injured person or the insurance claims adjuster or those folks. They're looking to the officer of the court. They're looking for the attorney to be able to explain why things are not working the right way and what are we going to do to fix it. And if you're not prepared to handle that, you're going to look foolish.
Yeah. Are you an early morning guy?
I've become an early morning guy.
Yeah.
I was not an early morning guy.
How'd you become an early morning guy?
Work, in part. Kids, definitely. I have my two kids are very, very good sleepers.
Thank God for that, right?
Yeah. They're 7 and 4, so I think we're kind of over that hump. But they've always been very good sleepers. But when my wife Jill and I were new parents, you're constantly kind of poking in, checking in. Is the baby still breathing?
Yeah, right. Yeah, doing that. Like, are they alive? You know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know. More than ever. Yeah.
So with kids, I became an early riser. And I like to exercise. I like to work out. I like to do different styles of working out. And I found through trial and error that the best time for me to do it is early in the morning. Because you get the best jump out of it. My most productive hours as a lawyer, as a dad, whatever, are within that time span after, you know, you get on the bike for a while or you throw the weights around for a little bit. You know, whatever it is you're doing for 20 to 60 minutes, you know, depending on how much time you have on any given day. So that has made me evolve into a morning person. You talk to me at age 20, 21, up to 25.
We've all been there.
Until I got my law license.
Yeah.
I had a keen skill for being able to sleep till 11 or 12, 11 a.m. 12
I think we all did at some point.
And anywhere too. I would fall asleep on my parents' couch, and I'd wake up and there'd be stuff going on around
me. Kind of like my wife. She does it. She can fall asleep anywhere, anytime. And I'm like, how? How?
It was a talent. But I think I phased out of it with the blessing of kids. So yeah. kids change your perspective on everything. And that certainly, I'd give them the most credit for making me a morning person. My son goes to school over here at Good Shepherd Academy, which I can't say enough good things about that school. But he's very regimented for a seven-year-old. He has a certain time he wants to leave. And if I'm not ready to roll.
He's telling you, Dad, let's go.
Dad. And we got him an Apple Watch. So he's like tapping the watch, like, we got to go.
I like this.
And it's evolved. We used to leave at like 7:20, 7:25. We've now backed it up. And thank goodness school's almost over for the year. 7:15. And so if I want to get a workout in, or if I want to prepare for anything for the day work-wise, I mean, I got to get up at 5 o'clock at the latest. But I'm at the point now where it's become a little bit of a habit, and it just leads to great productivity. Weekends are a different story. I'll sleep in a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, take a little break. But I often find that like some of like the most successful people and some of the highest performers in whatever profession, doesn't matter what it is, I've always found that, you know, whether it's, you know, early morning riser, workout, routine, and going back to like I said the word discipline before, and sure. You know, I could just tell by kind of as I'm now learning a little bit about kind of like your routine and how you're structured and how you do things, like I think the discipline in doing all the things that you do day in and day out is really what allows you to excel and to be successful.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm going to say it again. So some of all of our life's experiences, some of the other great experiences I've had that have helped me to be a little more structured. I'm coaching Coach Pitch Little League for my son right now. And I told the boys the other night, I said, Coach Mike, you know, I'm here now. I'm a big guy, so I'm able to do the stuff that they're doing. But don't ask Coach Mike to hit the ball or you know, throw anybody out from center field. I was the designated pinch runner in Little League. I was fast, but I was not a good baseball player.
Yeah.
But I kind of worked at it, and it was, you kind of realize where your limitations are. I was also a mediocre wrestler. I loved wrestling. I wrestled for about 5 or 6 years from elementary up until I got to, I think, 9th or 10th grade of high school was when I stopped. And I was okay as a younger kid, but then you grow and you kind of get awkward in your body. And I was always tall. I'm 6'2", and I remember being like 5'9", 5'10", and weighing like 110 pounds. So when you're 110 pounds and wrestling other kids who are shorter and put together, and you've got limbs all over the place, they're just happy to tie you into a
pretzel.
They're
wrapping you up.
They're happy to make a fool out of you. And they did. And then I got to the point where I realized this wasn't really working for me either. But what I took away from all of those experiences was being part of a team. And I took away, especially with wrestling, there's so much discipline in wrestling, not just in the technique of wrestling itself, but in terms of monitoring your diet, monitoring your fitness, and being prepared in terms of your off the mat activities, you know, what you're doing the night before or the week of matches and tournaments and things like that. So it helped. And then from there, we've talked about it a couple of times, but my sport became golf. And with golf, I had my dad as my mentor there, and my dad was my coach, and he was all in on it, which was fantastic. I was so lucky to have somebody who was so interested and just put in so much time with me to try to get me to the point where I was reasonably good at it. And what I realized through that is nothing was going to happen for me. I was not just a gifted athlete where I just kind of pick up a club and no stretch, no warm-up. I'm going to go out and shoot a smooth, you know, 72 to 75. It just wasn't going to happen. So we drilled and we worked and we put together a plan, and that clicked for me. I was able to accept and make good use of having a schedule, having a good plan, and getting the results out of it. And when I would see that we would put the time in and we would do it a certain way with competent instruction. I mean, let's not forget that. You could have somebody putting all kinds of time in, but they're not getting good advice or they're not being told how to do it the right way. my dad put time in to learn the game. He put time in to make sure that we had outside instruction that was teaching us the right technique and the right moves. You add that to good discipline, you get to your goals. And I think that is, my dad always used to say, golf is life in miniature. That's life in miniature. If you, whatever it is that you want to achieve, whether it's a profession, podcast, be good at a certain sport, or certain type of art, performance-wise, as long as you have a goal in mind, and as long as you know where to go for the resources, the mentorship, the people to teach you how to do it the right way, once you get to that point, it's just a matter of committing yourself and actually doing it. Nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah. One of the other things I noticed is you use the word prepared a number of times.
Yeah.
And I think, being prepared, like for anything, like I just, hearing some of these stories and some of the experiences you've had, the reoccurring theme that I've noticed is that you prepare, like you prepare a lot, you practice, you do a lot behind the scenes. And it kind of makes me think of a little bit, to make a parallel, like in podcasting too, because I've said this a number of times on this show that right now, you and I sitting here, this is the easiest part of my job. I'll say right here. Everyone thinks that this is probably like the hardest part. This is the easiest part, Mike. It probably is maybe the most fun, even though I still enjoy all the behind the scenes stuff. But like, this is obviously fun. Everybody looks and thinks like, oh yeah, you just show up, press a button, hit record, and it's all fun and it comes out and it's perfect and blah, blah, blah. However, the prep, in my world, as in your world, I know it holds true. The preparation is everything. And if you don't go in prepared, almost to the point where I feel like sometimes you almost need to be over-prepared. Because, and I know you can probably speak on this way more than I can, but I'm sure in the courtroom, you get curveballs left and right, and you need to be able to, on your feet, pivot in a moment that like you're just like, shit, what do I do now? I was not expecting this. And sometimes it's something that you couldn't have prepared for, even though like you prepared as much as you possibly can. But again, I think just being prepared for, whatever it is you're doing, whatever journey you're on, making sure that you're putting in the work behind the scenes, because that's where the magic happens. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. It's all that work behind the scenes, like This is 10% of the job right here, or less. Everything the other 90% is all the stuff nobody sees, and that's the boring, non-sexy stuff. But like, I still enjoy it. Like, I still like it, because, and if you don't, you're not going to be successful. Because if you can't do all the grunt work or the shit work or whatever you want to call it,
right?
If you can't do that, you're it's not going to work for you.
And you got to do it yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, to have a great staff and a great support team, is a world of benefit, but. I think we started to touch on this a moment ago, but we went somewhere else with our conversation. The trial part, that's the sexy part. That's the fun part. That's where you put your nice suit on, you get up there, you tell your client's story. It's a performance almost, and it's fun. It's fun in the sense that it's a serious matter, and it's something that you want to do really well at. But that's the culmination of all that behind-the-scenes preparation and work that you've been doing. And when you prepare properly and you do it right, it flows. I mean, it happens very naturally. And I think part of that is because preparation breeds confidence, right?
On the Stacks will be back in a flash after a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessNEPA. All On The Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights. This episode is brought to you by Burn, the fitness company behind the Today Show approved Burn Board. If I'm being honest, working out can be a real chore, especially as a new dad in desperate need of sleep and cardio.
Burn is founded by NEPA native Jimmy T. Martin, and his Burn Board offers a low-impact core and cardio experience unlike anything I've done before. They have hundreds of on-demand workouts that are great for beginners, seasoned athletes, and out-of-shape podcast hosts who love supporting small businesses. My wife and I use it pretty frequently throughout the week, and it's honestly a great way to burn a ton of calories without burning a ton of cash. Not to mention, it's a great tool for skiers, runners, wrestlers, and hockey players. Jimmy is offering all On The Stacks listeners 15% off when they use the code STACKS15. Visit theburn.com today to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15 at checkout. Again, that's theburn, THEBRRN.com to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15. It's time to get on board today with Burn.
A lot of times when people are in car accidents, kind of forget what we should do. First and foremost, call 911. Then get out of your car before moving it and take pictures. It's so important to capture what the cars look like immediately following the accident. Finally, call your insurance carrier and make a claim.
To learn more, visit Anzalone Law Offices online at anzalonelaw.com. This episode is brought to you by Loop Internet. Are you tired of buffering, lagging, and slow internet speeds? Look no further. Introducing Loop Internet, Northeastern Pennsylvania's fastest and most reliable internet service provider. With Loop Internet, you can stream, game, and work from home seamlessly. Say goodbye to interruptions and hello to lightning-fast connections. Loop Internet offers both residential and business fiber. Fast-track the future with their 10-gigabyte fiber and join the Loop Internet family today. Visit Loop Internet online at loopinternet.com or call 1-888-808-5667. Again, that's 1-888-808-5667 or visit them online at loopinternet.com. Loop Internet, where speed meets reliability. And now we're back on the stacks.
I mean, if you are prepared, you're not worried about tripping over your own tongue or saying something stupid or taking a position that's just contrary to your client's position or the evidence or whatever it is that you're, whatever story it is you're trying to tell. So you have to prepare 3, 4, 5, 10-fold for the amount of time that you're going to spend actually in the performance. And I think that's true of your work. It's true of my work. It's true of what you see teachers do in the classroom. I mean, you think about teachers. Maybe I should have mentioned that. I was a teacher for a brief time before I became a lawyer.
Were you?
Yeah, we'll come back to that in just
okay.
a second.
All right, all right.
Teachers prepare for weeks and months ahead of semesters, school schedules. They're preparing in the off season. They're preparing in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
They're buying supplies. They're buying things out of their own pocket to make sure that their students are having a great experience. So I have a very, very high fondness for educators. And it's because I've done it. My family comes from education. My grandfather, Dr. Tom O'Donnell, used to run the Wilkes-Barre Tech School, Wilkes-Barre Career and Technology Center, excuse me. And my dad, who I've mentioned several times, he had worked in that building as well. He worked as what he called the co-op director. He was the job placement director for the students that were going out into the workforce at that point in their study. And in addition to those two people who spent their entire careers in education, Uncle Neil, he's got an education certification. He did that before he went to law school. I got my education certification before I went to law school as well, and that was in part my dad's pushing. Like many teen 20-somethings, that was my dark period. That was my confused period. And that's where I found my uncle, and I found some of these other things that got me to where I am today. I met my wife during that period too, so she gets
big credit. You better give her some credit. You'll be in the doghouse
that's
after
right.
she listens to
so,
this.
So she straightened me out big time.
Yeah.
But the education background, it was extraordinary because, I got a fantastic education and degree from Bloomsburg University, and it honed more of those skills that we keep talking about today. I was standing in front of a classroom, which, by the way, you know what's terrifying? Being a rookie teacher standing in front of a class of 8th and 9th graders.
That is absolutely terrifying.
It's terrifying. They're ready to eat you alive.
Yeah, because I was the kid eating the teacher alive back in the day, so I know. And that's why I have the ultimate, just as you said, like appreciation, not that I have more respect for teachers, but almost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a kid, like I was a smart ass kid in the back of the classroom. Like I was, you know, right. Yeah. Not surprised. Right. But man, like the shit that teachers deal with and go through, like, man, like they don't get enough credit for what they do.
Well, and you got to deal with it on the fly, and you have to deal with it in a way where it's compliant with the mandates of their profession, the rules, the regulations, the laws. It's 2024. And even when I was going through, I guess it was 2005, you know, a kid mouths off to you, it's not the 1950s where you just walk over with a paddle and crack them on the backside. Mm-hmm. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So there's certain ways that you have to diffuse situations. And at that point, I realized very quickly, I think I was 20 or 21 years old, I don't care how cool I thought I was to an eighth or ninth grader, I was the nerdiest guy in the room, and they were ready to eat me alive. And some of them did, but you learned from those experiences.
Yeah.
But the education experience and being in front of the classroom, even though I didn't stick with the profession and I moved on to a different one, those are some of my experiences. I learned so much from that. And of course, too, you're dealing with a hierarchy. You're dealing with, who do you report to? Do you report to the principal? You report to the superintendent, the board? So there's a lot of life skills that go into just, even if it's just as a volunteer or even maybe it's not your full-time job, getting in front of a group, getting in front of a classroom, getting in front of a camp of children, there's so much to be learned about it. And I would also say, too, I've learned things from those experiences. It's helped me as a dad. Because, I mean, if you can't manage a classroom of students, and my certification was K through 12. It was business education and office information systems. It's a mouthful. But basically what I did was we taught a lot of Microsoft Office when it was new and the kind of the big thing. But we would do everything from that down to some of like the Math Blaster and like the little programs that the kids used in elementary school. You had to, as a student teacher, you progressed, but at some point you had to manage that classroom. So whether you're managing 6 and 7 year olds or 17 and 18 year olds, that's a major, major responsibility, number one.
For sure.
But number two, you better be competent, because if you're not, it's going to come out pretty quickly that this isn't made for you. And that, by the way, disclaimer, that's not why I didn't stick with education. It was around that time that the deposition in Tennessee that I told you about. So
lit those, a fire. Yeah.
Those life experiences were happening at the same time.
And
I thought, well, let's tack on a little more education debt and we'll get that law.
Yeah. There you go. Keep it going. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like this, you know, with, you know, lawyer, I mean, especially, I mean, I think all lawyers get a bad rap. Number one, first of all, not just, you know, your niche, I'll call it, but first of all, you're not a bad guy, right? You're an all right guy, I think. You know?
I like to think so.
Yeah.
You didn't call me an ambulance chaser yet.
Not yet. I was I'm warming you up a little bit. I was gonna, you know, start insulting you very soon. But
I cut you off at the pass.
Yeah. But no, like I think, you know, like how do you deal with that? Because I feel like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to it, right? Because I don't do what you do. But like, I feel like kind of there sometimes is like a lingering cloud. I would feel like if I was in the profession and like people kind of like look at you as like a bad guy.
Yeah, some do. And that's where we have to accept that whatever profession you're in, but for me, in my profession, we have to accept that we're not going to be 100% people pleasers. Not everybody's going to see us as a good guy. I mean, we don't pick fights, so to speak, because usually people come to us after they've been harmed.
Sure.
But when you file a lawsuit, nobody wants to get served with a lawsuit. But it's because they screwed up or they did something to harm somebody. So it is an adversarial system. And so you're going to make some enemies in that process. And as long as you know that when you're signing up, grow some thicker skin. You got to be tough. You got to be tough and you got to be willing to take a few punches coming your way. But you better be ready to dish out more than you take. So the lawyer jokes and some of the stigmas and the stereotypes that may negatively affect the profession, I just chalk it up as being a small percentage. And if you want to know what good comes from the profession, you know, read our website, look at all the client reviews that are on there. Take a look sit down and have a conversation with the people that we've represented, the people that we've helped. Because then you see it's not just noise. It's not just people clicking away on a keyboard saying, oh, this guy's a goof, he's an ambulance chaser, he's money for nothing, blah, blah, blah. That's all nonsense. There's nothing that we do is money for nothing. We are helping people be made whole because something has happened in their world that has turned it upside down or they've lost a loved one. So it is major, serious stuff that, that we're handling. And I'll be happy to take the people that maybe that we've sued and beaten, if they're the people that want to make the jokes.
Say you're a bad guy, yeah.
Yeah, have a day.
Yeah.
So have a day. And then kind of on that, that line of thinking, it is something that has permeated our community. And not just local community. I mean the whole community that deals with the legal profession.
For sure.
Because I can't tell you how many times people will come in and they've been hurt. And they sit down and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, I don't usually do this. This isn't me. I don't sue people for money or insurance companies for money, which, by the way, that's usually who the fight is with. But they're apologizing for coming in to see us.
As if they did something wrong.
As if they did something wrong. They're the victim and they feel bad about their circumstances. And they're, quite honestly, such a quality person that they feel bad about trying to right the wrong that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very quick to say, I do this every day. I sue people every day, sue businesses every day. And I don't want you to feel bad about that. This is the system that has been put in place by our elected officials, by our founding fathers.
And by us, literally us.
We did it. Yeah, this isn't something that you, as the person who just had their back blown out because of a work injury, this isn't something that you put in place. This is how we try to fix those negative things that have happened. And quite frankly, more times than not, there's other types of maybe lesser known relief that comes from the legal system, but it's money. And you don't have to be bashful to talk about money. Money exists in every aspect.
People get weird about money.
They do, and that's okay. It's a highly personal thing, and I respect and I understand that. But I mean, if you've been taken out of your job, and you have a family to provide for, and you need to put food on the table and pay the mortgage or the rent, and you need to have a major procedure, and you're not going back to work for the next 3, 6, 9 months, there's no room for apologizing for stepping into the lawyer's office. You got to protect your family.
100%. You got to do what's right for you.
You've got to do what the legal system that has been in this country for hundreds of years at this point is designed to do. And we're going to go get that money because it's there to protect you. It's there to protect your family. And we're happy to step aside from those legal stereotypes, those lawyer stereotypes, or the apologies that go with the victim's apology, which you see also often. And we help people to understand that you're doing what's right and you're doing what's necessary for you and your family. And one other thing I want to say on that. The other part of the civil justice system. So when I say civil justice, we're talking about somebody brings a personal injury or civil lawsuit against a person, a company, a manufacturer of a product. We don't do a ton of medical malpractice work, but that falls under the same umbrella. Not only are you seeking compensation for your client, but you're trying to correct improper procedures that are in place. Flaws in the way that a machine that's used in one of these large manufacturing facilities, maybe there's a cheap guard that could have been put in place and this individual's hand would not have gotten sucked into the machine. We're trying to correct the way that business owners and corporations and manufacturers of equipment are going about conducting their business because, sure, they should make a profit, they should have a successful business if they're disciplined, putting their time in, but you got to do it in a reasonably safe way. And that's what where the rubber meets the road more times than not is the argument is what was reasonably safe under the circumstances. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to help move society forward by taking those reasonable steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. So you could be helping your neighbor, you could be helping your friend by bringing that legal case because maybe that guard's going to get put in place. Or maybe that employer is going to approach the way that they're, just to use a very, very rough example, but I mean, let's say you're working as a landscaper. Maybe they're using different tools and equipment so that the way you blow out your back moving that boulder while you're doing some hardscaping or landscaping doesn't happen to your coworker.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that like could, you know, there's a lot of good that comes there, right? Like just kind of like you were just saying, like there's, you know, unfortunately, when something like that happens, it opens, you know, the door for a business to say, hey, let's make this better. Let's do this different. Let's make sure this doesn't happen again.
Right. And a lot of times things happen because some are accidents. More times than not, I don't like to use the word accident so much. It's just somebody was just being inattentive. They were being careless. They knew or maybe had a good idea that something could have been done that would have prevented that incident from injuring that person, and it just didn't get done. But what we see so many times, again, part of the human experience, is you need something bad to happen before people will take the necessary action. It's unfortunate, but it is true.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we shine the light on that. And what we're doing is, as I said earlier, the person who has been unfortunately injured, we're not saying that the way that they got injured is somebody was trying to whack them over the back and put them in the operating table. It was the result of carelessness, recklessness, something where somebody made a mistake that maybe they knew or should have known, and it could have prevented this from happening. So we're making sure that doesn't happen to the next person. It's compensation for the immediate victim, but it's also trying to help society become a better place.
You know, one of the other parallels between you and I is that we're both essentially storytellers. You know, you've said it a couple times yourself, just like you said about going back to, you know, being in the courtroom, like it's a performance, like there, you know, like there's so much that goes into it. There's so much preparation, and like you're telling a story, and, you know, obviously it's factual story. It's based on facts, you know, but, you know, kind of like one of these, it kind of reminds me of like, you know, are things black or white, or is there a gray area? Do you believe that?
I don't think anything's black and white. I think there's so much room for interpretation. I think there's so much room for looking at it through your perspective, my perspective. Like, we may have a lot of similar views on things. We're never going to see things the exact same way. And I think that's true of every human being, right?
For sure.
As hearkening back on my education experience, everybody learns in different ways. Mm-hmm. And some students learn very well by being talked to. Some students learn very well by reading independently and absorbing it on their own. Some students learn very well by getting their hands on it. And doesn't that explain our education system? I mean, if you can recognize that, some students are made for the science lab. Some students are made for sitting down and crunching numbers. Some students are made from getting under the hood of a vehicle or, growing plants, cooking food in the kitchen. We all have different things that drive us, and we have different talents and skills. So I don't really subscribe to the idea that anything's going to be black and white. There's always going to be that individual perspective on it. And I learned that through my experience in the classroom, my experience around the education system. And I think those people that kind of find the thing that gets their juices flowing, I find those to be the most successful people because they realized it. They realized, like, hey, this is...
I can do it this way.
Yeah, this is
my way.
This is what gets me out of bed each morning, and it doesn't feel like a drag. I mean, how many people do you talk to, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is they're complaining about their job, they're complaining about the relationship, they're complaining about whatever's going on in their life. The people that have found something and have found what they believe to be their little lot in life, I don't want to say no, but they don't complain because everybody complains.
Sure.
But
you can see it in them.
There's something that they don't even, it's nonverbal. They don't have to tell.
There's a different light about that person.
For sure.
And I believe that. I believe that too.
100%. And what I've taken to my practice and how, most specifically, how I interact with my clients is, it was nice of you to call me a storyteller earlier. I just talk. Sometimes I just talk and I just keep going on and on and on. And I can't remember where I started or why
I was going. Sorry. I do this for a living and I forget what the hell I'm talking about every 5 minutes. So.
But the point that I'm driving at on that is when I'll sit down with a client or especially a new client, I like to take a lot of time. And I want to talk to people. I want to try to get to know them. I want to hear what they have to say. The other thing I want to do is I want to take the mystery out of the legal process, especially in my specialty of workers' comp, because with workers' comp, it's its whole separate court system. In workers' comp, we have judges that are workers' comp judges all day, every day. They don't decide bankruptcy cases one day, okay, criminal cases the next. It's an administrative court system in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And with that, it's got its own special rules and procedures. It's got its own special way that it processes. Remember earlier I was saying that workers' comp is primarily done on a video conference system. So we don't often go into the courtroom anymore. And that's largely due to COVID and kind of the modifications that the comp system has made. But if this is a first experience for folks who are dealing with a work injury, and they've gotten a petition to cut off their benefits, or they've gotten, by the way, a petition is just a legal request, but they've gotten something to change the status of their case, or they're trying to get on workers' comp to start getting their benefits to begin with, they have no idea what they're walking into. It's completely foreign territory. It's a jungle. So we'll sit down and we'll talk with them about, all right, here's what you're going to expect from dealing with the claims process, or dealing with the insurance representatives, or dealing with representatives from your employer. Or if it's at a point, many times people come into us after they've gotten the request to terminate their claim or change their claim in some way, and they get a hearing notice. It's terrifying. And they're like, what do I do with this? What's going to happen? I enjoy that part of the job. I like being able to sit down and say to people, here's what's going to happen. And I'm not going to predict it to a 100% accuracy, but 15 years of doing it and having been before all of our judges in Wilkes-Barre and Scranton a considerable number of times, you could tell them at least more. You could tell them a lot more as to what's going to happen than what they had expected. And I think that calms people's nerves and it lets them know it's going to be okay. That's part of our job too. Part of our job is to be able to predict the future to a certain degree, explain the unknown, and help people understand that it's going to be okay. At the same time, sometimes you got to tell them it's not going to be okay when there's bad facts in the case, or there's bad information, or the case is only as good as the facts that you've got. But my point on that is you have to be candid with your clients too, and we make a strong concerted effort to say we can do this, but we can't do that, and you just. I think there's a certain amount of respect that goes with being upfront with people.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you're in the people business. I'm in the people business. I think everybody's in the people business pretty much regardless of what you do. And I think, I feel like over time I've really honed in on, some of the guests and the guests and the type of guests that I have on this show. And, it's people like you, because I love being in a room with somebody like you who, we share a lot. We have a lot of commonalities, even though our worlds are completely different. There's still a lot of crossover, as we kind of just talked about. Right. But in general, like when you surround yourself with people that are successful, people that speak well. Right. And all these other things, like you sort of then become that person, too. And I think it's so. If you're, and my mom always said it growing up, if you hang around with losers, you're going to be a loser. Get rid of the losers in your life.
I bet your mom knew my dad.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and I'm not kidding. Like I can't tell you, my mom's going to laugh her ass off because she's going to watch this. She watches all the episodes. So shout out to mom. But, I think about that all the time, and it is so true. And even though, mom, forgive me, when I was a kid, I probably gave you mouth back and probably was like, no, they're not a loser, blah, blah. And you know what? She was right. And they all turned out, maybe not all, but most turned out to be losers. And, I moved on. I don't think I'm a loser. Maybe a little bit once in a while, but really it's just being, surrounding yourself with people, like-minded individuals, personally, professionally, share the same values and morals and beliefs, and just want to do good things and build businesses and just really enjoy life and build the life that you want to live. And I think a lot of people don't realize that it's actually not that hard, and that if you just kind of surround yourself, going back to the mentorship thing, and we'll just kind of leave it there, right? Because you touched on that a little bit, and I think the mentor thing is so important. I don't care where you're at in life. I don't care how far along you are, what you do, what you're not doing at that time. But finding, somebody, a specific person like a mentor, and then just also really surrounding yourself with the people that people you want to become, Right. And again, it doesn't have to be, I'll just use you as an example. Like I don't ever want to be a lawyer, but do I want to be in your presence more? I do. Because it feels good. And you can just tell. Like I feel like I'm a pretty good judge of character. And when somebody walks in a room, I can just kind of tell the energy. You could feel the energy. I could at least.
That's kind of you to say. I appreciate that very much, and that's a great compliment. The analogy along those lines that I like to use is like you're building your own team.
Yeah, right?
You're building your own team. The people that you want to be associated with, that you want to be in the trenches with, and that you want to be able to lean on. And they're going to lean on you. And as long as you kind of understand your role in that team, it's going to be a harmonious relationship. People are going to get along. That's one of the great things about living where we live and living in this country is we have that power of choice, and we have the ability to pick and choose who we associate with. I think people can overcome circumstances. I think people can have bad breaks and then make a change. I think it's hard. And I think it does require a lot of discipline. And we see it in our system, and we see it throughout the legal profession. I mean, there's so much recovery and remediation and getting people from a point where they were low, and now they're back to being productive members of our community. But you have the ability to choose whether or not you're going to spend time with somebody like Bill Corcoran, or you're going to choose to spend time at some of our local networking groups, or you're going to choose to spend your time with people who are trying to make Northeast PA and beyond a better place, or are you going to spend time with those folks who are going to sit in the bar and just rag on the area and talk about how bad it is and how this area has nothing to offer? Because everybody who's listening to this has heard that nonsense.
100%.
And it is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And if you want to know about the good things that are happening, listen to your podcast. Stop by Good Shepherd Academy, where my son goes to school. I can't say enough good things about that institution.
I hear a lot of great things about it, actually.
Well, here's what's great about it, Bill, is it is a community. And it's not just principals and teachers talking at kids, keeping parents in the dark. It's mm-hmm. the exact opposite. It's a very team environment. And that's a top-down thing. The principal over there, a guy by the name of Jim Jones, he is just, there's certain people that are made to do certain jobs.
Right.
That gentleman,
he's fit.
Was
he's
made
fit.
For that yeah. job. He is just so good at what he does. I'm certain it didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's worked his butt off to be able to be the principal that he is. But then he surrounds himself with these other staff members and faculty members. Mrs. Joyce Elston's the assistant principal. She's outstanding. The teachers in the building, they're outstanding people. They're just good quality caliber people. And you could tell that not just looking at them, but you go over to the school functions. You go and you see how they interact with the kids. You see how they interact with each other. I mean, they like each other. They you could see that there's a cohesion. Mm-hmm. And then the other part that they have that I'm always in awe of is their involvement of the parents. They really involve the parents, not just with, you know, do fun stuff for your kids, but there's a collaboration with the faculty and the parents.
Yeah,
and
it means a lot.
The kids are involved. And just the outgrowth of that, every team member is doing their thing. And they're doing it in an organized way. And it's just one example. I have the privilege to sit on the board at Junior Leadership Northeast. Don't tell me there's not good kids in this area or there's a lot of talent in this area. I do the interviews every spring. I am blown away every time I hear those kids tell me about the activities that they're involved in, the things that they want to do to make Northeast PA a better place, the actual concrete ideas that they actually have. And it's heartening. It reminds you that there is a lot of talent and there's a lot of driven young individuals in this community.
And good.
Good. And we can go on forever about even as you go up about the adults. There's a lot of really great adults in this community. And we can go on for days and days about those good people. You can't let the vocal naysayers, because they're loud,
mm-hmm.
You can't let them rule the day on what this area is all about or what we have to offer, because this is a fantastic place to live. It's a fantastic place to raise a family. Mm-hmm. And I remind people constantly, I came back here voluntarily because I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a great place to practice law. It's a great place to work. And for those folks that just want to run it down, feel free to find somewhere else.
Yeah, right. Yeah, stay out of my circle.
That's right.
Yeah. So if anybody unfortunately ever finds themselves in a position where they may need somebody like you, where do they find you?
So we're on Wyoming Ave in Kingston. We're at 267 Wyoming Ave is where our office is located. Phone number at our office, 570-821-5717. And you'll meet my wonderful assistant Brenda when you call that. And anything that you would need, from workers' comp, personal injury, motor vehicle accidents, product liability incidents, anything where somebody has been a victim and they've been injured or harmed is basically within our skill set. We have a website. It's O'Donnell, O-D-O-N-N-E-L-L-law. I feel like I'm leaving a voicemail giving this information.
Yeah,
this constantly. It's O'Donnell, O-D-O-N-N-E-L-L-law.com. And we really just recently revamped our website with the help of the folks over at Cole Creative. And it's really turned out nicely. There's a lot of information on there about different areas we practice in. There's biographies of all of our attorneys. If I could take a moment to just kind of shout them out.
Yeah, of course. The team's important, man.
The team is outstanding, and we have a team that I'm extremely proud of, and it's just a privilege to work with them each day. The head of our show, Neil O'Donnell, incomparable.
Uncle Neil
is the man, and he has, you know, you talked about discipline and hours and things like that. I will never be on his level. He is on a level. I don't know what time he starts his day, but I know I get emails from him at 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning when he's in go mode.
And he's an early bird.
Early riser, but he is so purpose-driven. He takes people's cases so seriously and takes them so personally. And I don't think you can ask for a better lawyer, certainly for me, a better mentor. And he's the captain of the ship. And I work with my Aunt Kathy as well, so that's his wife, Catherine O'Donnell. Kathy does the hard job. She runs the office. She's a lawyer. She's also she has an MBA. So she has an MBA and a law degree, and so she handles some work in that realm, in the business realm. She handles estate work and things of that nature. So wills, powers of attorney, and things like that, and then probating estates. But she keeps all of us in line, and that, for most, would not be a one-woman job.
She keeps you out of trouble.
She very much does, and has been successful for 15 years. So we're gonna try to keep that trend going. And then we have two younger lawyers in our office, not so young anymore, but we have a gentleman from Scranton, Gerard Gaughan, and he comes from a background where he worked as a judicial law clerk for a very prominent judge in Lackawanna County. And what he brings to the table is he is a phenomenal researcher, writer. He's a great advocate, oral advocate, and trial lawyer as well. But that is his bailiwick. Is he can take a legal brief and put it together, where it would take me days upon days. That's not my specialty. So he brings a great skill set to the table. And our newest attorney, a gentleman by the name of Joshua Perry. Josh has an outstanding story. So we do a lot of work in the medical legal field. Overlaps. I mean, anytime you have an injured person, there's going to be a doctor, nurse practitioner, physician's assistant. Mm-hmm. There's medical records and stuff to go through. And Josh comes from the background where he worked as an intensive care unit nurse, among other things. He worked in different units, but he was a nurse and then transitioned to law school. Wow. After the career as a nurse. And you want to talk about a smart guy? He's able to take these medical terms and these things
what a better fit.
We like to think that we know what we're talking about, and Josh is two.
Then there's
down.
Him. Yeah,
Josh is two doors down from me, and I'll put records in front of my. What does this mean?
Yeah.
Make this make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Tell it to me like I'm a kindergartner.
Yep.
And he can, and he does, and he's just a phenomenal lawyer as well. And then we have a great support staff too. We have three great paralegals: Noelle, Sandy, and Lauren. They all bring their own special skill set. They're all very talented in their own special ways, because I don't know how this happened, but our office has everybody's got a unique strength about them. Like Noelle is very close to my style. Like, she's very regimented, very on top of things, and keeps everything straight and narrow. We say to Sandy a lot that she's our spiritual advisor. She has a way of just relating to people. She has a way of, people call and they're upset. They're hurt. They're dealing with a long recovery. She has a way of listening that, unlike anybody that I've ever met. Mm. So that's her talent. And Lauren is our newest paralegal. She's fresh out of school, full of piss and vinegar. She's got more energy than anybody else.
Love
in the
it.
Office. And she's hungry. She's at that point where she's looking to us for mentorship and doing a fantastic job. And she comes from a background where she had worked in restaurant industry and stuff like that. So she's had some parallels to some of my experiences. So I love our team. And I wouldn't move or change anybody around. And as I mentioned before, Brenda, she's my assistant in the secretary for office. Neil has a direct assistant, Tanya. I know I'm giving you the full roster here, but
take
a full opportunity.
No, it's important.
But we are only as good as the people that we are surrounded.
I was just going to say that, like, it's, and I love that you gave credit to your team, and I love that you shout them all out, because I think it's so important. Just as you said, you'll only be as successful as the people you surround yourself with, right. Kind of going back to what I said before, but it's really the team, you know, within your business that really helps you be successful.
And when they're firing on all cylinders, we do. And if somebody's not there or somebody's lacking, yeah, we can pick up. That's what a team has to do. But it's, if given our choice, we would have those people in those positions at every given moment, because that's when we're at our best. And it's a work in progress, and it took time to get to where we are right now. But I can't say enough good things about the people in our office. And when people come to us, they get the full staff. They get everybody there. The communication, as we've talked about so many times, we return phone calls. We respond to emails. We keep you posted on your case. And that may sound fundamental to some. That is so necessary.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's what makes our office as great as it is.
Yeah. Well, you're a hell of a communicator.
As I said before, I'm kind of just talk. Yeah. I just talk. I say things. And yeah. I hope people find it as sincere. Because I do yeah. I do mean the stuff that,
for
that
sure.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
But there's still teenage Mike is still there too.
Yeah.
We still have our vulnerabilities and insecurities. And
yeah.
I if I could say anything to the audience, I would just simply say that what I'm saying here, I mean it to be genuine. I mean it to be sincere, because we are in a very serious profession.
For sure.
And we, when people say, can you help me?
Yeah, when you're called upon, man.
That's a high honor. That's a high honor. And the legal profession is exactly that. It's a profession, not just a job. You know, we're signed up to take people's most sensitive information and caretake it, and then use that information, if we can, to get them to the objectives that they're trying to achieve. And I look forward to doing that. I've been 15 years in. I hope I do it for another 50.
So yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
I love it. Who would have thought, like, you know, a conversation with an attorney, an injury attorney, workers' comp attorney, could have been this, you know, I'll say exciting and fun. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, maybe when they see, like, oh, it's going to be a lawyer, like, who the hell cares? Who's going to want to watch or listen to that? Like, oh, lawyers are boring. This is boring. But it's like, you're really not, you know? When you really take the time to sit down with somebody, you know, I feel like at this point I've probably spoken to almost every walk of, like, life, I feel like. But, you know, when you really take the time to sit down and get to know somebody and peel back the layers, there's just so much more to people. And no matter what the background is, no matter what you do, I mean, it's so, you know, oftentimes I've had people say to me before, like, oh, why are you having that person on? You have nothing in common. I said, watch great. Me. I will find something in common.
And it's great
always.
That you don't, right? It's great that you don't.
It's good, yeah.
It's about engaging with people.
It's about a balance.
Yeah.
It's a balance.
It's about hearing what they have to say. And I think if you can come into any conversation with an open mind and saying, this person's going to be interesting. I just don't know why yet.
We'll talk and it'll come out.
You're the first person to call me interesting, by the way, in my entire life. So it's like, I appreciate it.
Everybody is interesting in their own way.
Yeah.
You have to bring it out of them.
I'm usually boring, stiff. You know, those are usually the adjectives.
You're not today. At least not for this last hour you weren't.
I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming in.
You're doing a great service to the community. Getting the local folks in the know as to who's here. And what services do they offer? What products do they provide? What can they do to make a positive impact in your life? So keep rocking and keep doing this, because it's
hell
awesome.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Plus, I always appreciate somebody that comes on, is well-dressed, looks good on camera, speaks well on the mic. Like, I couldn't have asked, you know, like, if I could have guests like you, like, every day, like, this is like, it makes my job easy. It does.
It's Mario cufflinks.
Yeah, it is. I think it was. So shout out to your son again. Hopefully he's still watching. Hopefully he didn't get bored with all of our, you know, life and business talk. But shout out to your son for picking those out, keeping you dressed sharp, because he's got to keep you on your toes for sure.
That's my guy.
But again, Mike, I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad, you know, this was some time in the making, you know, and thank you. You know, you had reached out to me, God, I forget, several months ago, I feel like, at this point, and you just sent me, like, a genuine compliment, which, like, I could tell by that message, like, that it was genuine. You know, normally, like, people, you know, like, when they want to come on the show, like, everybody has, like, a little bit of a you know, there's another selfish reason, and that's okay, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know? But, like, you know, when you sent me that message that first time, and I'm just like, we didn't even know each other. By the way, this is only, like, for everyone watching, listen, this is, like, our only, like, second conversation ever that you and I have ever had.
True story.
But, you know, I got that message, I'm just like, you know, like, I knew of you, you know, but I didn't know you, right?
Right.
And I was just like, he's a good guy. Like, that was nice, you know? And I was like, I want to have a guy like that on my show. You know, obviously, it took some time for us to kind of, you know, get together and then, you know, set this up. But, like, you know, like I got that, and yeah, thank you for that, because
you're welcome.
It's you know, it's people like you that I wish would reach out more, and they do, you know. But I just enjoyed. I know I said this before, I'm repeating myself, but I enjoy, you know, sitting across the table from a guy like you and just having these types of conversations, because I think it's so important. You know, for everybody, I don't care where you're at in your life. There's always something to be learned. There's always something, you know, you can always gain something from listening to somebody. And I always say, everyone's like, oh, like, what'd you get out of that book? Sometimes it's only like one little like thing. And if somebody today just got like one little blip of information, whether it was worth from it. You yeah, or from yeah. me, it makes it all worth it. Well, and that's it.
And I just want to say on one thing that you said there, more mentorship. I learned that from my uncle. And being sincere, being a good mm-hmm. person, but taking a moment. We got the complainers. They're loud. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them out there, and they're happy to do it. Take a moment to recognize good, because that goes so much farther than just spouting off the things that are griping you or bothering you. It has its place. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. But my uncle has a knack for recognizing anything good that happens, from something small, like, you know, my son got a hit at Little League the other night, or somebody got a promotion, or something significant happened. I've noticed that he takes the time, picks up the phone, a call, or he'll send a letter the old-fashioned way. And I'm not saying that that's how you have to do it, but when you see good things happening around you, take a moment and acknowledge it, because it helps to boost the people that are doing those good things, yeah. encourages them to keep doing good things, and we all benefit from that. So that's kind of where that came from, and I'm not perfect at it, but I do try to make an effort that when I see good things happening, and it's somebody within my team or within my circle or somebody close enough, if it's an opportunity to reach out and maybe make a connection or have an acknowledgement, it makes them feel good. You know what? It makes you feel good too, because it we're all in this together at the end of the day. And if we're going to succeed and prosper as Northeast PA, we got to try to find as many energetic, good people as we can, and get them rolling in the same direction.
100%. All right, Michael O'Donnell, On the Stacks, the MPP studio. Thanks for joining me.
Loved it, Bill. Thanks.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast, or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.